This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com on an ugly day outside. I'm so used to talking about how beautiful it's been outside, Dave, and now it's just kind of awful. Except that it's not cold, so that's good. There's the silver lining to the weather.
I don't know about that. It doesn't make up for it. I talked to somebody today, and he was like, yeah, I think it's going to rain from now until May. Don't tell me.
Well, and you know how it is with a pet. Well, you have a backyard, so you can just let Hoover out the door and you don't have to do anything. I got to get Frank geared up. We got to walk down to the street, take him across the street to the park. And by the time we get back, just drowned rats. Just I'm in the garage with a towel, drying him off, drying, you know, it's just, it's a whole process when the weather's like this. So.
I go take like these old towels that we have underneath the washer and put them in the dryer and warm them up and then go out there and rub Hoover down.
That's pretty good. That's thoughtful. Yeah. That's a nice gesture on your part.
Pretty good doggy daddy.
I hadn't thought about warming him up.
Yeah. It's a nice little touch. He'll appreciate it.
I bet he would. I'm going to do that now. So hopefully everybody's having a good day. It was a great day for the Seahawks yesterday, which we will talk a lot about that. We'll talk Mariner baseball. Not such a great weekend for them by any stretch of the imagination. They've got a chance to, they still have a chance to get where they need to go. And it starts tonight with the Houston Astros in town. Ryan Roland Smith will join us at 3 o'clock to talk about that. The Pete Carroll press conference coming up at 4 o'clock today, and we'll find out what we learn coming up at 5:15. Are we talking to a Mariner today?
No, we're doing it when we're out there. So we're out there Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Okay. So we're going to get him in person.
All right. Meanwhile, the Seahawks, they got it done yesterday, Dave. It started. I told you on Friday, I said, I feel like this is going to be a comfortable win. And after
kinda
the first
ended
half,
up being.
Ended the first half, I'm going, oh boy, was I wrong on that one. Ugh, that first half, I don't know what happened there, but it makes the outcome so much better because it was such a slog in that first half. They couldn't get anything going. They go into the half trailing 13-12. They were 1-for-8 on third downs. Panthers were 4-for-9. They were 0-for-3 in the red zone. Geno had a really lousy first half, if we're being honest. He was 11-of-23, 153 yards and a pick.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, and you just went into halftime going, what's going on here? They're playing a bad. I know Dalton's got a ton of experience, but you know Shaq Thompson's out. Their quarterback's out. They've got their own issues going on. And then the second half was a completely different story. And I've always thought the idea of, well, you got to make adjustments. You got to make those halftime adjustments. But you've talked about, you know, listen, by the time you get into the locker room and you use the bathroom, you sit down, you've got like 7 minutes or something, you know, right. By the time everybody's settled and done their thing and you're ready to come back out. So I think it's overplayed about halftime adjustments until yesterday. I don't know what happened. I don't know what was said. I don't know what chalkboard they used or what grease board they used, but that was a different team in the second half. Geno, again, first half, 11-of-23, 153 yards and a pick. Second half, 12-of-13, 143 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
And they're 2-for-5 on third downs. They're 3-for-3 in the red zone. They scored 25 points in the second half. What happened, Dave?
Well, I think it was just everybody coming together all at once, and including Shane Waldron and Andy Dickerson, the offensive line coach. Because you look at who started on the offensive line, there was only one starter that played 100% of the time, and that's Evan Brown. Everybody else, well, and Damian Lewis played 89% of the game. So really, you know, there's two guys, and Ben Brown came in and played guard for Damian Lewis.
Yeah, you brought up that name. Who's Ben Brown? I don't remember Ben Brown being on the roster.
Well, I just remember because I looked, I was like, wait, I thought his name was Evan, and there's another guy named Ben Brown.
I had no knowledge, and we saw Bradford, who started, the rookie.
Yep.
He got hurt. He tweaked his leg for a second. We saw him limping off the field. I'm going, oh. Yeah. So what are they going to have to move Evan Brown to guard and bring Olu in to play center is what I was thinking would happen there.
Yeah, possibly. And I think Bradford was running off the field, he was just running off the field. And or maybe it was at the end of the play where you could see him just tweak his ankle a little bit. And I was like, I think you can tape that up. And so, yeah, he did get back in there and didn't miss any snaps. But, man, you're looking at Stone Forsythe, and you saw him get beat by Brian Burns with that inside move. I mean, that guy's a really good pass rusher. that probably doesn't happen if Charles Cross is out there. You know, so, I mean, look, that's and like Stone Forsythe, his game is coming around. Same thing with Jake Curran. They're both, you know, like I said on Friday, they're good football players. But, you know, you've got a couple of guys there that that are hurt that, you know, so that was a big deal. And the other
was
thing.
Was that why they, but sorry to cut you off, but yeah. Is that why you felt the first half was the way that it was? Because I didn't feel like Geno was under just a relentless attack and he's got no time. I thought, man, he just seemed off. He seemed like he had time. He threw that pick and I didn't put that on the line. That was on him. It was just a weird first half.
Yeah, I just think it was a testament to these guys, the coaching and these guys hanging in there and just getting better and hanging with the game plan. And they had a good game plan and, you know, they finally figured it out. So, yeah, I mean, it's to me, I don't think there was anything magical. As a matter of fact, in the second half, they started running like some really funky formations. You know, there was the direct snap to DJ, you know, and you had Geno lining up outside. And I think between commercials or whatever, Rabel and I were kind of talking about, like, maybe they're getting a little bit too cute with some of these formations. They had two tight ends in the backfield and all this motion and everything. But a testament to these guys just hanging in there and the coaching, because these are all backups. And what happens usually when you have backups in there, and I mean, most of them, I mean, obviously Evan Brown and Damian Lewis, but typically you take a lot of your playbook and just scrap it. Say, hey, let's just make it easy for these guys. It's going to be hard enough blocking one of the better front sevens in the NFL, but, you know, so let's just make it real simple. And they didn't. They just kept with their game plan.
They made it more complex.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, they always say, if you want something done, give it to a busy man. I think these guys were maybe a little overwhelmed in the first half. In the second half, it just started to come together for them. So, yeah, I don't know if there was any, Matt, I didn't see a lot of different, like you said, I felt like the game plan got even more complicated. And they handled it really well.
Yeah, it was amazing just to look at the numbers and look at, you know, what we saw first half versus second. And here's Geno talking about that very thing. What changed for them in the second half?
Yeah, I think the O-line just, you know, really took the game over. You know, I thought in the second half, the way we ran the ball, you know, it helped us finish those drives in the end zone. And so, you know, in the first half, we moved the ball. I think we had a two punch today, you know, and that's always a positive sign for the offense. But as we always talk about, you know, we want to score touchdowns. And so, you know, today we, in the first half, didn't do as well. But, you know, that's the good part about, you know, our team and our offense is that we kept battling and, you know, showed a better, you know, showing in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, again, you look at the red zone numbers, first half, second half, they were 0 for 3 in the red zone in the first half. They were just 1 of 8 on third down. So the second half, they go 3 for 3 in the red zone. They go 2 for 5 on third downs. They put up 12 points in the first half, 25 in the second. And I think, you know, and this is not pandering to the fans, I think they had something to do with it.
Huge.
8 false starts.
Yep.
8 false starts out there. And with each one, it got incrementally louder. Yeah. I think the fans are like, okay, we're having an impact. You could feel that building get louder. You could just feel it with each one. There's 5. All right. There's 6. Like it just grew.
Yeah. And you could see all the guys down on the sidelines getting the crowd going and everything. So yeah, that had a huge, and Rabel and I were in the booth. What was that game? Oh yeah. 05. It was against the Giants.
Yeah.
They had 11. That's the record there, but it's absolutely huge for our defense and, you know, the crowd participation. You know, the other thing that happened in the first half is Geno got sacked twice, didn't get sacked in the second half. Mm-hmm. So just everything just finally came together. And
were
I thought
both of them in the first.
That's what it says here.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm just reading, Bob. I'll read whatever they put in front of me. Let me make sure. Yeah. 2 sacks for 17 yards in the first half. So, and that was it. For him, only 2 sacks the whole game. So I thought it was just a testament of guys coming together and sticking with the game plan. And the fact you got it done with backups, I thought that was. And then you look over on the defensive side and all of the guys that, you know, oh, well, and also Will Dissly was another guy that was out. But man, you talk about your fair share of scratches. Holy moly. With, you know, you look at Kobe Bryant wasn't out there. Trey Brown ended up getting hurt.
Concussion.
And then, you
Reek Willem was not there.
Reek. Yeah.
Jamal was still not ready yet.
Right. So yeah, lots of things to like there. And then, you know, what'd you think of the Julian Love roughing the passer?
I'm trying to remember that. Was he? Did he hit him with his helmet?
Yeah, hit him just right. I mean, like it was textbook of what they're calling.
Yeah.
But I still just think he was, you could see him kind of lower his shoulder, like he's trying to get his head out of the way. But I don't know. A lot of those, I'll just say, hey, you know what? If you're going to get a penalty, make it a good one.
Yeah.
And that was a good one.
Make it count.
Yeah.
We'll get to the defense here in a quick second, but just a little bit more from the offense. DK Metcalf, who went out there and gutted it out. I mean, you've had injuries into your ribs recently. I've had them in the past. That it is hard. If you've never experienced a rib injury, whether it's a cartilage situation or a cracked rib.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know what he's got going on, but he was sort of questionable coming into the game. I thought he showed a lot of guts. He made some big catches out there. He was impactful in that first half when they were having a hard time getting the offense going. Meanwhile, he, after the game, talked about what Pete Carroll said to them at the half.
Pete talked to us at halftime and said we just got to go out there and finish it, because last time we were here, you know, with the Rams and, the half that we put out, left a bad taste in our mouth. So we don't want to, you know, go out there and be repeat offenders. So, I mean, we just start to execute, you know, the plays Shane called and just start to make the plays when they came to us.
You don't want to be repeat offenders.
Offender. Isn't that from...
That's from Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona. A repeat offender. And oh, you sir, look at...
That's a real dumb name.
The offense had, you know, had some big plays. I mean, they gave up some big plays. 47, 38, 28. But, you know, two 36-yard plays, a 34-yard play, 22. And then, you know, you look at what the running backs were able to do. I just think there's so much to be excited about with Ken Williams and Zach Charbonnet.
I mean, Ken Walker.
There we go. Have I told you my story about Ken Williams? Also wore number 9 at Stanford.
Oh, the
he ended up
White
being
Sox.
The GM yeah. for the White Sox.
Yeah, yeah.
I've probably done that like 10 times. But
sorry.
Yeah, so for Ken Walker, I just, you know, he's one of those guys, and Rabes and I talked about during the game where you're like, oh, wait, don't do that. Oh, no, that was good.
I love the play. There was one run where he was bouncing off people, he was spinning, and then once he, like, landed on the sidelines, he puts his arms up like, ta-da! At the very end
that
of the play.
That was great. And everybody just loved it, right?
Oh, it was hilarious, because it was right in the flow of him spinning, running, hitting, oh boom, and he lands. It was like a dismount in gymnastics. Like,
that's
he just,
exactly
I right. landed it.
Yeah.
I stuck the landing. But then this play I thought was awesome. Charbonnet just chucked a defender a good 5 yards back.
Second down and 7 for Geno and company. The handoff to Charbonnet. He's going to go around the left side. Stiff arms a man, turns, first down. Oh, my goodness! What a blast! One of the defenders stays on the ground. I think it's Deion Jones. Down at the 2-yard line, Charbonnet hit him like a bus and knocked him out of bounds. And he was stepping out as well with Charbonnet. Oh, my gosh. No, he hit the defensive back on the play and just knocked him out of the back of the end zone. Holy catfish.
He got thrown out of the club.
Got Dave Wyman in on the I like the initial, oh, because you just saw the guy go flying backwards. He just got catapulted backwards.
Well, and there was another play that ended up being a penalty, so it didn't count. But like I like to say, it still happened.
Yeah.
Where he ran over another defender on an 11-yard run. There's a penalty on it, and he just trucked him. So, and we talked to Ken Walker about that last week, about, you know, using that. If you can run a guy over and you do it and you put it on film, the next tackler, that goes around the NFL. And even the one, the penalty, that goes around the NFL. You still see that. And now defenders are like, okay, do I, you know, get down low and think he's going to try to run me over? Or is he going to put a move on me? And he kind of compared it to pass blocking, you know, that sometimes you get a linebacker that's going to plow right through you. And sometimes you get a guy that's going to move. And if you don't know, it makes it incredibly difficult. Well, I feel like for Charbonnet and Walker too, really, but for Charbonnet, I mean, he's one of those guys that a lot of people around the league are like, okay, I don't want to get run over by him.
Yeah.
Because then that goes on film and everybody sees, oh, I saw you get trucked. So yeah, that I thought that was really important to the run game. And it gets back to the whole thing with Pete Carroll. He talks about a punishing running game, and Zach Charbonnet,
He's a punisher.
Very serious dude, and he's a big guy. And, yeah, you see him coming at you, I think that's going to be – I love that that tape is going around the NFL.
Yeah, and by the way, I had a Dave Wyman thought when I saw him. I was out on the field after the game, and he was there signing autographs to fans. He looks like he's 12 years old.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like a kid. But he
did you say that?
No, I did not.
Oh,
see,
okay.
Unlike
see,
you,
that's
I didn't voice it.
I did. Hey, Zach, over here. You look like you're 12.
Yeah, that wouldn't have gone over well.
You would have got crickets.
Yeah, but I mean, that he was fun to watch. Walker had a great day. It was so good to see what happened in the second half. Now, what do we make of the Seahawks defense? Because the big problem last year was their run defense. They were getting trucked. They were down in the bottom of the league in every category as it pertains to run defense. This year, they're up toward the top. They allowed 44 yards in total on 14 carries. They're still at a 2.9 yard per carry average, which is third in the NFL. They're seventh in the NFL in total rushing yards allowed at 79.3 per game. They had three sacks yesterday. They only had two in total coming into the game. So there was a lot of good that happened with the defense. It's the pass defense that I've got questions about. But first of all, just to give a thought on what they're doing against the run that maybe they weren't doing last year.
Yeah, I see the linebackers attacking the line of scrimmage. I see guys knowing where their gap is. There's no more of that two gap where you see a guy just take the guard on and then, you know, either go one side or the other. They're hitting their gaps. So it's huge. And you know, Jordan Brooks, I feel like that guy, and I told him this the other day in the huddle, he always does right. It's very rare that I see him and I'm like, he screwed that up. I mean, he is such a good, solid player. And that might just be who he is his whole career. Maybe he doesn't turn into Bobby Wagner, who, you know, has 98 yard interception returns for a touchdown and stuff like that. But I feel like those guys are really in control. Bobby's got them all playing on the same page and they're just attacking the line of scrimmage. So yeah, it's really fun to watch. And as far as the pass defense, I mean, I talked to our guy Anish, who is the voice of the Carolina Panthers, mm-hmm. and he goes, you know, I'm wondering if you guys might play a lot of man-to-man because we don't have super athletic receivers. And maybe with Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant out there, they would have played a little bit more man-to-man, but they did play some. I feel like they're better off just playing that than the zone, because the zone defenses, they just need to be a little bit more sticky and, you know, anticipating routes. I talked about the depth of the linebackers dropping 10 to 12. I mean, those are the kinds of things that are happening, and it's just shocking to me because they made such a huge improvement last year.
Yeah.
And now it's the other way around, and you got to get both of them working together, man.
Yeah, and it's only three games, so it's hard to tell what they're going to be. They're still working on things. Key guys are out, but some of these numbers were there when they're, you know, Rick Willen was in and Trey
last
Brown was
in
Detroit,
and yeah.
So you look at all three quarterbacks they've played have all thrown for over 300 yards. And that includes, you know, backup and Andy Dalton.
Yep.
They've allowed a total of 984 yards and completion percentage of almost 66% in these three games. Five touchdown passes, one interception. So they're averaging opposing quarterbacks, 328 yards per game. They are 31st in the league, only ahead of the Chargers.
Is that total yards or?
Passing yards.
Passing yards. See, that's where they were 2 years ago.
And then in points allowed, they're 30th.
Yeah.
And so they're allowing points. They're allowing a lot of yards through the air. They're 30th in total, just total yards allowed. They're 30th. So they're at the bottom in all, you know, a bunch of these categories. Again, three games, so take it for what it is. But some of these problems existed, as we just said, before Woolen was hurt, obviously before Trey Brown and Kobe Bryant were hurt. So what is it a matter of what you were just talking about with his own defense, or how do you correct what's not happening in the passing defense?
Yeah, just stick with it. And, you know, I don't want to say keep doing what you're doing, but do what you're doing better. You have to be able to run zone defense. And, you know, that's what I see. And especially that first game was really bad. So, but you mentioned, you know, a backup quarterback. It was a shame that we had to play Andy Dalton. I would have much rather played Bryce Young.
So, yeah.
Much rather, especially when it got loud out there for him. But I'm trying to remember, did we get takeaways yesterday?
No.
Yeah, so we went minus one. I mean, look, you can give up those kinds of yards when you go plus three. But at halftime, as you keep mentioning about the offense, I mean, it looked pretty grim.
Yeah.
Because you weren't taking the ball away. You were allowing a lot of yards, and your offense wasn't scoring, just field goals. So, yeah, it was just a matter of hanging in there. Pete always talks about, can you win a game in the first quarter, the second quarter? It's the fourth quarter. And second half just, came around. I thought the hero was Jay Reed. Mm-hmm. Jaron Reed has been a fantastic.
I was gonna say, can we get to that call before we go to take two?
Yeah,
your call
sure.
was great. This call was great, Bob. You guys, you're going to have a good reaction to this.
Fourth and seven. Andy goes down. Dalton goes down in the arms of Jaron Reed, who does a sack dance and scares every young child in the south end zone. What a beautiful sight. Dalton never had a chance on fourth down and seven, a loss of nine, and Jaron Reed, they tried to double team him, and he was not going to be denied.
Scaring every child. He did the Michael Bennett hip swirl. Or thrust, or whatever you want to call
it. Hangle McCringleberry?
Yeah, we were going off the Key and Peele thing, too.
Yeah.
Remember that sketch?
You remember that?
No.
Oh.
Okay, so yeah, he does the, they called him Three Pump McCringleberry. And actually, Bennett did it as, you know, kind of a tribute to that skit.
And he got flagged for it. Remember? Yeah, and then they said, I guess I can only do two pumps or something like that.
And that's right from the sketch. So we'll show you during the break. It's
fantastic. Remember Danny was up in the booth, like, counting out. He's like, one, two. But if you've seen that skit, it makes sense to you. It's hilarious. But, yeah, it was that was the scary little dance that Rabel was referring to.
All right, let's take two.
Well, this is as big as it can get tonight. Luis Castillo and Justin Verlander for the Mariners and the Astros. 5:30 pregame, 6:40 first pitch. Good news for the Mariners. They've won the last 10 games that Castillo has started.
Let's hope that good news continues because they desperately, desperately need it. It was a dreadful weekend of baseball. The results were not what anybody wanted to see or expected to see. And they still have the ability to control their own destiny. You're not relying on those around you, even though we really do appreciate the Kansas City Royals quite a bit right now. But it's still in their hands, and it starts tonight.
Well, we'll get into this later, but I'm just wondering if you could have tweaked it so he was pitching against the Rangers, and we'll talk about that later. But yeah, and Justin Verlander, it's going to make it tough. But I mean, it seems like the MLB is right now, it's a game of matchups. I mean, they match up really well with Houston, and not so much. What are they now?
One and eight
against the Rangers.
Yeah, that's not good.
Well, Jimmy Garoppolo is in concussion protocol today after last night's loss to the Steelers, despite playing the entire game. And we also have two Monday Night Football games tonight. Eagles-Bucks at 4:15, Rams-Bengals at 5:15. No inactives yet, so we don't know anything about Joe Burrow's final status.
Think the Rams can go in there and beat the Bengals?
I think if Burrow is compromised or not playing, I think they can. I think the Rams aren't as bad as everybody anticipated. We looked at who they were last year. We've talked about it. I mean, how many teams are going to be any good when you lose your three best players? And that's what they did. They lost Aaron Donald, they lost their quarterback Stafford, and they lost Cooper Kupp last year. I don't know any team in the league that's going to be good when you suffer that sort of attrition. So I think maybe we, and I know they've got a lot of youth, and I'm not saying they're going to be a playoff team or a Super Bowl team, but maybe not quite as bad as some were saying they were going to be. So to answer the long-winded answer to your question, yeah, I think they certainly could go in there and do it.
Yeah, and I think, aren't the Bucs 2-0 going into this game, Buccaneers? Yeah. So, yeah, that might be a good game as well. So, yeah, the Rams, I don't care what their record is. The next time we play them, whenever that is, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. Yep. Always is. All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, the Mariners were swept in Texas, and there was an interesting decision that was made in one of the games. We're going to get into that. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on your only home for the AL West race, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This hour has been brought to you by Amazon Hub Delivery.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, we'll have our weekly conversation with Ryan Roland Smith. It's always fun. You know what I think is hilarious is when he makes himself laugh. Like he's thinking of something he's about to say and he starts cracking up.
And it's always funny.
Yeah, his laugh is kind of like Rick Riz. Rick Riz, when he laughs, I immediately laugh. I love Rick Riz's laugh. And Ryan's kind of got the same thing. Like, you can see he's getting ready to say something he finds really funny. He starts laughing before he spits it out. He was doing it even last night, as depressing as that series was. He was doing it on the postgame show last night, and it was cracking me up.
En route?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you could see his face, like, sometimes you just hear it when we're talking to him, but he looks exactly like a little kid who's, like, going, okay, I got a really good one here.
Yeah. Love it. I absolutely love it.
He is the best.
So he's going to join us at 3 o'clock. We'll talk some Mariner baseball with him. And it's not a great story. I mean, they got swept by the Rangers. You got two really awful starts out of your rookies, unfortunately, and they're rookies who, you know, if Robbie Ray and Marco Gonzalez are healthy, are we seeing either of these guys? Maybe see him September call-up, maybe see Bryce Miller. I don't know that Wu would be up here. And they've, you know, all in all done a phenomenal job for the most part. But, you know, that's a different lineup you're seeing there. You saw two different lines. You saw the Dodgers and you saw the Rangers. And I think you saw a pretty marked difference between them in the lineup that the Mariners roll out there. I mean, there's no two ways around it. If you want to say it's because of the money they spend or how they develop their hitters, whatever you want to attribute it to, there's a clear gap between the two.
Yeah.
I think that's very fair, if you're being honest.
It is. And, yeah, I mean, I think you feel like the Mariners have the potential to do it if they get hot, but it just seems like the Rangers, that's just who they are. And, you know, we're talking about matchups. I mean, they're 8-2 against Houston, which I'm curious. I got to check it out. But anyway, Houston versus Texas, I think they're somewhere closer to 500, I think. But, you know, you look at just the matchups, it's a good matchup tonight. 8-2 against the Astros. But, man, the Rangers have their number.
Oh,
and just a really well-built team.
Well, and so in this series, you saw a few different things. Mariners on Saturday, they were shut out. Yesterday 9-8, it was hardly a pitching duel by any stretch, and they lost the opening game in a situation where the Rangers put up 8 runs. So a lot of runs were scored except for that middle game. Now, the interesting thing about that is that Jared Kelnick in game 1 was on base 5 times. He had a base hit, he had a double, and walked 4 times, which I love, because that's a guy who's up there with discipline. That's a guy who's up there doing what the team preaches. He's not chasing. He's not expanding the strike zone. He's seeing the ball. And that to me was just such a great sign. Yeah, you love these guys to hit home runs and do all that. But for him to work 4 walks and a double, tremendous, tremendous. And after the game, Scott Service was asked about him, and for, you know, good reason. The outcome wasn't great, but he himself had a great night. Here's what Scott Service had to say.
You know, what a night. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, he gets on base 5 times against a couple tough lefties, both Heaney and Chapman out there. Awesome. Totally under control. You could just see where he was at. He was in the zone, seeing the ball really good, and we're going to need it. We're going to need it every night. They have a ton of left-handed pitching, and you want to let him ride it out and do it. So, heck of a game by Jared Stott.
Yeah. So everything you said there is accurate. It was a great night. You got to give him credit for it. It came in a loss. That part stinks. But you see him out there doing what he did. And then the very next night, he's not in the lineup. He's not in the lineup. And you could say, well, they had a lefty on the hill. We could talk about what that guy does versus righties and blah, blah, blah. How do you, when you've got a lineup like the Mariners, that's a bit top heavy, that is really inconsistent, as we've talked about, how do you take a guy out that, you look at his numbers, he's hitting better against lefties this year than he is against righties. It's decidedly more plate appearances against righties, certainly. But he's got a higher average. His slugging is better. He's better in his OPS versus lefties. So it'd be different if, hey, man, this guy, you look at him against lefties, he's horrible. That's not the case. Mm. He was on base 5 times. He got in that game in the second game as a pinch hitter. What did he do? He worked a walk. So he's on base. He goes up to the plate 6 times. He's on base 6 times in the first 2 games. I don't have any idea how you don't put him in the lineup the next day. That makes zero sense to me, and I'm sure it's something with the analytics, and somebody said, hey, this is what the numbers tell us. At this point, give me your best 9 guys. Give me your best 9 guys. You're not sitting JP. You're not sitting Julio. You're not sitting Cal. You're not sitting Gino. You're not sitting anybody versus a tough righty out there, right? So why would you do that with Kelnick? I mean, I don't feel like you've got even a close to a better option than him out there, personally.
Well, I think, number one, it's interesting that we're talking about Jared Kelnick as being this key piece when, you know, people wanted him gone or not in the lineup and things like that after he kicked the water cooler or whatever. Yeah. And so it just kind of brings to mind that it's a feel thing sometimes, right? Like, we talked to Scott Service about this at the very beginning of the year, that, you know, you have your analytics, but then you also have, you know, what your gut tells you. And
yeah.
and he talked about how sometimes, you know, those intersect, sometimes they don't. And, you know, a decision had to be made. And you're right. I mean, I'm sure somebody has numbers on what that looks like, but it's just a matter of where Jared Kelnick was. You know, if you're, I feel like he's got a pretty strong, you know, his finger is on the pulse of this team. He figures out, you know, where a guy's at, whether or not he's, you know, on a winning streak, you know, as far as getting up to the plate. And I don't know. That's a tough job for him. And I suppose we wouldn't be talking about it if they got a win.
Yeah, I just don't. It does, especially on the heels of that comment where he's like, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the guy's on base five times and we're going to need that every night. And
so what do you think's
happening? I think somebody from the front office said, here's what the numbers say. Here's who you should put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because him saying what he just said, we're going to need that every night. And then the very next night, he's not even in the lineup and you get shut out 2-0. You know, I'm not saying you would have won the game. I'd have no idea. He could have gone 0 for the night. I mean, that's baseball. So it's not saying, well, had they put him in there, they would have won. No, they still might have been shut out. But I just don't know how you heap that praise on him the night before and talk about needing it every night. And then the very next night, he's not there except late in the game as a pinch hitter. And then he works a walk again. At this, like I said, I get analytics. I get that the numbers are telling you a story. And here's the probability when you go with this versus that. At this point, give me your 9 best, because you don't have the luxury of pulling somebody out of a lineup that is really inconsistent and uneven. You just, in my opinion, you just don't have that luxury of yanking the guy out and saying, well, the numbers tell me I should go with a righty here.
Yeah, well, apparently, I mean, Service was on that side as well. And, you know, it's just kind of interesting how how he answered that question. But, you know, since he's been back, what has he been in? 10 games, 9 games, batting .286, just 4 strikeouts, 8 walks, 4 RBIs. So he's come back pretty strong, you know, from that injury. And, you know, it's just a matter of, I don't know. To me, I would rather go with Scott Service's instincts on that one.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what changed from the night before.
Yeah.
That doesn't add up to me. But, you know, it was a bad series. Nothing they can do about it now. We'll see what they do moving forward in terms of the lineup. I would hope he'd be in there as long as he's helped. My first thought was, all right, maybe the foot is still a thing and they don't want to run him back-to-back nights, yeah. perhaps. And I didn't hear anything about that. So I don't really know. I don't know. It was just me guessing, like, all right, maybe you know, every team's got their analytics department and they use it. They lean on it. Certainly it tells you a story. It tells you about probability and here's the best avenue. That's the only thing I could think of on the heels of that praise, that night, that production from him, and then the next day, he's not there. Really? Those two don't match. Meanwhile, it could be the weather.
You feel better?
No. I don't. I was very disappointed with the weekend. Very disappointed.
We need to talk it through.
I need answers, damn it. Meanwhile, we'll find out what's bugging us. What's bugging Bob? Coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob on your home for the Mariners playoff hunt, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
What's bugging Bob?
It could be traffic.
Hey.
It might be Angels fans.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
And it's definitely Stephen A. Smith.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
It's time to find out what's bugging Bob.
What's bugging Bob is presented by Issaquah Pest Control. A reminder, Ryan Roland Smith will join us at the top of the hour as he does each and every week. And we got a funny text about this, Dave. 360 said, wait, I'm confused. You mean what we just heard isn't actually what's bugging Bob?
Well, it was, and it's going to be 2 segments to take care of this one. That was one of the funnier responses. Like, Bob, do you feel better? No. Like, immediate answer.
I do not feel better. I'll feel better when they start winning. That's when I'll feel better. But, yeah, I don't, you know, outside of the Mariners, which just absolutely drove me nuts, the only other thing that really got to me over the weekend was, and I don't know if we have this later in the show, I didn't see it, but Colorado gets their tail kicked by Oregon, which, you know, Dion's brought a giant spot.
Yeah, we'll get
spot.
Into it 3:45.
We're going to get into
we
it?
Can, if you want the cuts now, we can do it.
Okay, I'll save it. Yeah. I'll save it. There was a weird response.
He's
weird
got plenty
response.
Of things. We can go into the files here and get something else.
That's the only other one. I mean, I don't love the weather, but outside, I'm good. Yeah. The Mariners drove me absolutely nuts. I'm very, very not happy about them. But outside of that, that's why I was soliciting Matt during the Matt had a very funny story during the break, because there's always something bugging Matt.
To tell me.
And Dave had the perfect solution. But give us your story. Give us your story.
So last weekend, it was like going to be the last nice weekend of the year for 6 months. I was down on the beach reading, and someone who I know but just barely came up and started having a conversation with me. And I still had the book open. I was still glancing down at it. I thought it was obvious that I didn't want this conversation to continue, but he just kept going. I didn't know how to get out of it.
And then, Dave, your suggestion was?
Just read really loud, out loud. Just start reading out loud.
Just the idea of him just out of nowhere starting to read whatever book it was you were reading out loud, and just to look at the look of confusion on that person's face would have been priceless.
It was a Stephen King. It could have gotten insane if I started.
Oh, it was Stephen King. Yeah, I had a conversation with somebody not too long ago, and Bob and I had a little exchange about that, because it was somebody that would just start talking over you. And so I usually give way, but he went like, it was like 20 seconds. And I was like, okay, I'm going to keep going here and see how long it goes. Let's see how long the crazy will last.
So it's two voices going at the same time.
And I was like, because usually I'll just go, all right, whatever. And man, it went for a long time.
Did he get louder as your voice was going?
No.
Because I've tried that same thing.
Just more determined.
Just more determined. Yeah. I've got thoughts and I want you to hear them all before you respond.
Yeah. You were saying that about an old colleague that he would ask the question like, I don't know what you think about it, because I think this, and you'd be trying to answer, and
you didn't really want an answer to your question, did you?
No.
You just wanted to tee up your thoughts on it in the way of a question. Yeah, that's always so. I've tried that before, and the only thing that changed was the volume of the conversation. I did what you did. I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to keep talking and see if they realize it. And
just test it out.
We just both got louder.
It was just awkward. Right?
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, I'm going to go Matt Nelson and say I'm what's bugging me myself. Over the weekend, number one, I couldn't find my car keys, and I was looking everywhere, and our garage is such a mess. I'm like, I'll never find it if it's in there. And Shannon was like, it's probably in your car. And I'm like, well, I'd have to be pretty stupid to leave my keys in my car. So finally, I searched the garage for 20 minutes, and then all right, I had to go look in the car. There was like a roll of paper towels, and the keys were right under that in the front seat. So, yeah, there was that. And then
is she an I told you so person? Was she like, mm-hmm?
No, she actually mimicked me by saying, oh, I'd have to be pretty stupid. I was like, all right.
You're like, I guess I earned that one.
The other one was that we didn't have a pilot light or any gas. Everything's gas. Our HVAC system, our hot water heater, and that was the first thing. Hot water heater went out. I took a cold shower the other day. It was only psychopaths take cold showers. Yeah, right?
Is that a Seinfeld?
I think so. Yeah. So, and so what ended up happening, I had Puget Sound Energy come out and, they said, yeah, that usually happens when somebody runs into there's like a little earthquake valve or something that will shut gas down if there's, you know, there's a rumbling or whatever, right. Or if it gets hit by a garbage can. And the guy was like, yeah, well, the garbage people probably did that. And I'm like, I'm the garbage people.
I did it.
I had no idea. You know, it was like no gas, nothing. And I tried forever to light the pilot light and our hot water heater. And then it turned out to be that my dumbass ran into the earthquake valve with one of the garbage cans.
Now, could you have done what they just flip a switch, or how do they fix it?
I didn't know. I don't know what they did, because I went out and looked at it. It looked the same, because I was on the phone with the lady. She's like, does it look like it's dripped? I'm like, what would that look like? And she couldn't explain it, so they brought a guy out, and he lit all my pilot lights and everything, and everything's working. But yeah, that was one. That one was on me.
That was all you this
weekend.
As
Percy Harvin would say, that one's on me, boys. Yeah. That one's on me.
And the car keys.
That's on your boy here. That's on your boy.
There you go.
He was there the other day, by the way.
Percy was?
Yeah. Percy Harvin was there with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I saw a couple of the guys. I didn't see them all, but I saw Red Bryant, who actually looks smaller. I mean, he's not a small guy, but he's one of those guys where you worried about post-career, like, man, this guy could get really big.
Yeah.
Looks like he went the other way. And actually, I saw him eating salad.
Oh, look at him.
Yeah. But I saw him and Michael Bennett, who's got a fashion thing going that I don't quite get, but it's
apparently
it's
you're not very cool, Bob.
Yeah, I guess not, man. I don't know what you call it, but I saw him and a couple of the other guys, but I didn't see you. Told me about John Ryan. I didn't get a chance to see
John Ryan's yoked up.
He was always kind of muscular, though.
Oh man, he looks like a bodybuilder, man. He looks good. And then rode up in the elevator with Ricardo Lockett, one of the great guys. Saw our guy Steven Hauschka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, saw him out there. It was really cool having all those guys back.
Yeah, what a cool thing. Before we move on, Lefko, anything?
This weather, man. It's
Mike,
bad.
It just started.
Well, paddleboard season's over.
You got like 6 months more.
And Matt's not even. We talked about this. His kayak season's over. My paddleboard season's over.
You got it in on Friday,
get it in on Friday, yeah. Okay. It was good. But I will have that to complain about if you ever need something every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
You'll
complain
about the weather.
Months. Yeah, we can just go to that.
Stay tuned for Mike's thoughts on the weather every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. All right, coming up, we're going to get the thoughts of this man on the Mariners and what they need to do to get things turned around this week. Ryan Roland Smith will join us next. It's Wyman and Bob on the exclusive home of the Mariners playoff chase, Seattle Sports, and the Seattle Sports app.